Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Love letters, as you know, are just a wonderful way of saying anything you want to anybody. And by the way, even if you don't feel unconditional love and admiration for a person, you can feel ambivalent, you can feel angry, you can feel anything you want, and you can say what you feel as your truth and in the most compassionate way possible, and you will really have a love letter. I want to go to our guest today, Kyra Espinoza, who is an educator and a poet. And Kyra, I'm just going to go to you and ask you to talk about you. And I'd like to know, and I'd like our listeners to know, what brought you to this stage of being a poet?
Thank you, Janet, for having me. I was born and raised here in San Francisco in the Mission District. My parents immigrated here from El Salvador due to the civil war down there. Growing up, in the Mission during the 80s and 90s, early 90s, was quite a struggle. I mean, when you're a kid, you don't really understand that. You just feel that your environment is normal. So it's not until I started, being a teenager and kind of realizing and comparing and contrasting my reality to other people's reality that I started to notice, oh, well, this is different. Because I used to go to Catholic school for most of my K to 8 experience, mm-hmm. and then I went to public high school. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, also caused me to really question the contrast and the disparity between public and private education.
Oh, so what did you see there?
How much more crowded public school classrooms are, wow. how less diverse private schools are. In Catholic schools, me and the few other folks of color, I definitely felt like there was a difference in how we were treated. Some of my my friends were very, it really did impact me, the kind of discrimination I saw that they were treated with. And, and being from the neighborhood that we were from, after being pushed out of school, they just got caught up in gangs and street life and stuff.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, eighth grade was definitely middle school, as is hard for everybody. It was definitely hard
for everybody in terms of it's an age where you can feel awkward at best.
Yes. And, in particular, for me, because in the eighth grade, I had just came back from El Salvador. That was my first time. My mom took us there to live there for a year when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And it was right after the peace accords were signed.
Did you like that year living there?
I loved it. Yeah. I did. I really feel like that year was my last real childhood year, 12 years old. And it made me appreciate the things I had here, the sacrifices that my parents made, because I was able to absorb so much of the just seeing the poverty out there,
in El Salvador.
Yeah, and what the war had done, but also seeing the positives, like just the community.
Do you think children of immigrant parents, and I ask this about every culture, are aware of the bravery and selflessness of parents who have come here? They gave up a culture in which they were important and comfortable to come someplace else where they were strangers and had to struggle for the sake of their children. Did children know that?
No. I mean, I didn't. Even though my parents really made it a point to remind us every day. I mean, that's the only reason why I maintained good grades in school. No matter what I was getting caught up with, on the streets or with friends and trouble and stuff, I always maintained my grades, because that was what my mom always said, education, education, education. I grew up in... The Mission was so filled with gangs and all that kind of stuff.
So you grew up side by side.
Yeah. I mean, I had friends and family who were in gangs, that was a part of yes. just my reality, and cutting school and smoking weed and drinking, all those things. But I never let myself go far down that road. Like, I always maintained my grades because I knew I wanted to go to college. I wanted to be the first person to complete college and make my mom proud, for all the sacrifices she had made. But that was only because she was such a fierce woman, mm-hmm. Like, I really owe it a lot to her, because even then, like,
fierce in her desire.
Yes, in her desire to to make sure we knew.
Right. The sacrifice she didn't come all the way here so she could have some kid in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And but it was hard, you know. Like, I remember growing up and, like, you know, not seeing images of me reflected in mainstream society. So I, you know, there was a time when I wanted blue hair, I wanted and blue eyes and blonde hair. So, you know, and I was ashamed that my mom spoke with an accent.
Why? I'm sorry, I shouldn't interrupt, but that is so interesting to me. Why?
Well, because you are made to feel, well, not so much now, and I think it's complex how it's changing, because there are more Latino images, there are more.
That speaking with an accent meant she could speak two languages.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I'm proud of that. Uh-huh. And you know, and, like, that's the other thing. Me being bilingual, at first I didn't want, you know, when I started learning English and I saw how, you know, different people were treated, I didn't really want to learn Spanish. But it was my mom who, like, forced it. You know, every time we were at home, she said, no, you have to speak Spanish, you know. And I'm thankful for that now.
Good, yeah.
I'm thankful for all of that. But, you know, that's just the... That's the dilemma, I feel like, you know, if children of immigrants have to grow up with and kind of navigate two cultures and you know, the stereotypes that are reflected in the media. So all of those things, I mean, that's what influenced my poetry writing, you know, like just thinking about all of that.
When did you start writing poetry?
8th grade was the first year that
I
wrote a
poem. What was your first
poem?
Is it in this book?
It is.
Can you read it to us?
Sure.
Okay. Just while you're... I should have asked you to mark that before, but
it's the first one.
Poetry is such a satisfying business because it's the perfect short story.
It is.
Go ahead.
So it's called How Can People Be So Cruel? How can people be so cruel? Or was it that I was a fool? Maybe it's both. I won't let that happen again. That's an oath. But I've said that many times before when people have hurt my heart right at the core. I tried to trust again when my heart had healed, but I got hurt and my scabs again got peeled. So what do I do from here? I do what I did before. I shed a tear. But after that, I must leave the past in the past. I have other things which are first on my mind. All the hurt is last. I got hurt, but I can still see the sunshine after the rain. I look on to the future and forget the pain. Because after all, it wasn't my fault that they hurt me. It's their loss and not mine, you see. Sooner or later, they'll realize how wrong they were. See, it wasn't me, it was them who was the fool. But the question's still there, how can people be so cruel?
That's wonderful, and that's so true. I mean, all that about, it's the other person's lack and character flaw that makes them do that. That's an interesting business of cruelty and bullying. So what did you do with this first poem? Did you share it with your parents?
No.
Your teachers?
No,
or was it all private?
Yeah. I mean, I'm so thankful that I kept those journals through middle school and high school, because that's what this book is. It's just a collection of poems that I wrote throughout, you know, my adolescence, teenage years, and even some that I wrote in my 20s. So,
How do they help you, the writing?
It's definitely an outlet just to release those emotions, and it helps me process experiences. You know, it helps me think about, it's really helped me to just grow, be self-reflective, you know. A lot of times, sometimes I think we can get caught up in the cycle of blaming other people, but writing has really helped me to see that everybody's on their own journey, and we all have to make our mistakes to learn. And I've made mistakes, you know, nobody's perfect. So just like, you know, I would want somebody to forgive me for my mistakes, I forgive others, you know, like I...
But were you always like that?
No. I mean, that's definitely been a process.
Can you talk about that process? Because I see in this, it would be very easy to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a drop of anger in this. It's wonder, it's questioning, it's noticing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's...
And is that just your personality?
It's part of... Okay. I think it's definitely part of me just wanting to understand. I've always... That was one thing that, I mean, growing up, I just observed a lot and always wondered why. Like, why... What would make people act so mean? Like, my dad used to hit my mom, so I grew up with that before I could even talk, you know, as
a
child.
Did they stay married?
No, she left him, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's not so obviously.
No, it's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. Very true. But yeah, luckily, you know, my mom being the fierce woman that she is, she did.
When you say fierce, you mean fiercely strong.
And yes, she's, yeah.
Okay. Sometimes. Talk about her a little. I wish, please, somebody, I need a television moment. Because just to see your smile when you say that, when you talk about her being fierce. And are you an only child or do you have?
No, I'm the middle child. I have an older sister and a younger sister.
Mm-hmm. So what does her fierce do? How does it show itself?
You're
smiling like you feel safe around it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that's given me strength because, you know, when I go through my rough things, I think about what my mom's been through. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I shouldn't complain. Like, she's been through all this and survived. So, you know, it's given me strength.
And when you look at what you didn't have and the difficulties and you were saying that you compared, talk about when you were young. And I think that's true. Whatever circumstance you grew up in, that's your normal. You know, if you grew up in Buckingham Palace, that's your normal. But what did you think you didn't have?
Money. I mean, poverty has always been such a struggle in my life. I mean, that was definitely one of the hugest issues, I would say.
Poverty that you really had to go without?
Yeah.
Or that you just didn't feel privileged enough?
No, just that, I mean, it was a stress on my parents. You know, they both had to work to put food on the table and pay the rent.
But they always did that. You always had shelter and food, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Especially, you know, what made me more conscious of the differences was going to a Catholic school where kids obviously were more privileged.
Oh, and you went to a fancy school. Okay.
Yeah.
So life wasn't actually poverty stricken in the way that you could see it sometimes.
You could
and
in
you
the
were
neighborhood.
Young and beautiful and on the way up.
Yeah, I mean, it got to a certain point where they couldn't afford that anymore. I mean, that's why I ended up going to public high school.
I see.
So they said, okay, you know, we've struggled enough to put you guys through Catholic school, so now enough. You guys are going to go to public high school.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then when my mom left my dad, obviously as a single mother, having you know to raise three kids on her own, when I was a freshman in high school, that definitely made things harder for us. And you know, I started working at the age of 15.
What'd you do?
I worked at Ghirardelli Square. My first job was working at a coffee or tea shop, tea shop.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into the arts, a theater program
at school.
No, it was this community job at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, actually. And, yeah, ever since that, I just kind of got more and more into community and art work. And kept writing. I mean, that's what kept me writing, is just learning about the inequalities in our world and, you know, how the educational system could be improved.
How could it? Let's talk about that for a minute, because I feel the same.
Well, yeah, I think... we need to completely reinvent the way that the curriculum is taught. You know, it needs to be more interactive. It needs to be more relevant. It needs to be multicultural. It needs to include the arts. And that's, you know, that's part of the work that I'm doing right now. We just had a wonderful event last night, actually, with Dr. Tony Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote this book called Creating Innovators, and he talks about that, you know, in order for our young people to be empowered and to become, you know, creative, active citizens, our educational system needs to empower them with...
Okay, so that's a really good point, because what was education always about?
Well, I mean, it was always
meant to be that in some way, right?
No, the boarding schools, school was an institution that was founded to colonize and to rip students of their culture. I mean, it was, you know, Native Americans in boarding schools. It wasn't that
I'm not talking about how it gets misused.
But that's what it was founded upon that, you know, like it was founded upon just kind of, making people, you know, into the mainstream culture and to become good workers, not to be thinkers and innovators.
Okay, well, so that's my point. So, but it was always to empower people in some way, because it used to be that reading was only for the priests.
Mm-hmm.
It was better that the population was kept ignorant.
Right, right.
And then at some point, it was better than that the population did have some education.
Some education.
So it could take care of itself.
True.
So it got off track, maybe. Mm-hmm, but I think in all fairness, it was always meant in some... I mean, somebody must have thought, arrogant as it may be, that it was empowering to take people's cultural identity away and make them all just cream cheese.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that has to be redefined.
Right. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the U.S., we're one of the most diverse countries.
Yes.
So I think that is definitely something that we should appreciate and really take advantage of in terms of how to educate our people, you know.
And to bring everybody in. I mean, we always, I think in America, we always benefited from that diversity.
Definitely.
You know, we have attitude from this group and food from that group and looks from that group and
I agree.
You know, what we treasure in every group, we simply absorb.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And yet they are left out of what we are taught. Do you remember how you were taught American history in school? Because
I clearly, crystal clearly remember this time in the, you know, eighth grade, and we were going to learn about world history. I loved history. I used to, you know, that was one of my favorite subjects. But so I was like, okay, well, I know my parents are from El Salvador, so let me skip to the, you know, chapter on Latin America and see what we're going to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, it had nothing on El Salvador. It had something on Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember feeling so confused. I was like, wait a minute, like, this is supposed to be world history.
How did your whole lessons
this
get left out?
This is Latin America. Yeah. I mean, seriously, I sat there like my mind was really just like...
Did you ask about it?
No, I didn't. I mean, I just sat there and I was like, this is so weird. Like, why does the book not have it? I literally remember that feeling, you know? And it's just funny because those are the instances that really, I think, impact you and shape you. So then as I grew older, that's what I think made me so passionate about education, because I have so many of those moments where I'm like, what is wrong with this? You know,
part of being empowered and learning to be empowered is being included and seeing yourself reflected
definitely.
In the group. Is that what you're getting at?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So how would a person do that? Okay, I'm asking you this as an educator. How would a person in America, where there are so many groups, each of whom has a precious and important culture, how do you get all that in to a curriculum where you have 1 hour a day for history? I mean, maybe it just should be not so loaded on the American history side, or what?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the other things that Tony Wagner spoke to at the event and in his book is that education needs to be more interdisciplinary. We can't just, you know, teach about cultures in history. I mean, you can teach about cultures through math, through, you know, literature, through all the other science, all the other core subjects, you know? I mean, that's something that
okay. So
it needs
wonderful.
To overlap.
So you don't have to count on that 1 hour a
exactly.
day to include El Salvador. You can do that in the home math class.
Astronomy.
And the, well, because you can pay tribute to who discovered what. Is
exactly,
that what
yes.
And that would do a lot, wouldn't it?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Music, okay. art, yeah, film. You know, we have so much technology nowadays, and it's not, I don't feel it's taken advantage of in the educational system. I mean, things, you know, learning would be so much more interesting for young people, because if it included multimedia.
Mm-hmm. That really is an interesting point that actually I never thought about, because I think about teaching culture in history class. Or what they used to call
mm-hmm,
social studies,
mm-hmm,
which I think
mm-hmm.
is a better actually mm-hmm. name for it.
I agree. I definitely
yes.
think so too. Social studies, yeah.
Do you still call it social studies?
I don't know. I mean, probably I think in middle school they did call it social studies, but then when we got to high school, it was history.
Because social studies, you can't include so much more. You know?
Yeah. And I think it needs to be connected to the present. You know, I think so much when we teach, we talk about the past and you know, but how is it connected to the present? You know, how is it going to shape our future?
Mm-hmm.
I feel education really needs to be more multimedia, more interdisciplinary, and...
What about longer school days and no summer vacation? Just curious.
You know what? I honestly, I feel that I kind of like the year-round schooling system, and yeah. where you have breaks, you know, every season, you know, a couple weeks, or I don't know, if it, I guess it's the quarter system that some people have. But yeah, I do think that there should be some more like
I'm really living in San Francisco and cities. We don't need time off to farm, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need time off to, you know, another thing that I think would be really important to include in the educational system is traveling. I think every young person should go on a study abroad program, and that shouldn't just be available in college. I used to work, one of my most favorite jobs was through this program called Experiment in International Living, and it was for high school students. And these high school students got to spend their summer traveling to another country and doing, you know, either a community, environmental, art project. And, yeah, it was just, it was such a great way to, for them to learn about different cultures and to learn about just different societies and just, you know, a whole new environment.
If that can be done, and that's expensive, but there could be ways to do it.
And there is money. It's just about prioritizing it, you know, and investing in our education.
And by the way, there is money. If we kept our eye on, I don't know if you're aware of this, but several years ago, there was an article in the newspaper, $97 million had been embezzled out of the San Francisco Public School Department. Do you know about this?
A long time ago, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I do remember hearing
about
that.
By four of the people we put in there.
Yeah, yeah.
They just took it. $97 million.
It's crazy.
Money never, you never get the money back. Anyway, okay, that's another story. But what about, I always wondered why there weren't after-school clubs.
There's a lot.
Are there?
Yeah. I mean, that's most of what I worked in, nonprofit, after-school programs, community programs.
I went to junior high school, and the population was kind of split. This was in L.A., and it would have been so nice. What a wonderful way to learn Spanish.
Yeah.
Have after-school clubs, and the kids who are fortunate enough to speak another language teach it. I think that would have been nobody. So you learn about culture and you get lucky enough to pick up another language when you're young enough to do it.
Definitely.
And that kind of sharing.
Yes. Yeah.
But yes. Okay. So I see what you mean about not just doing it in history class. Thank you for telling about that.
Yes. Thank you for asking.
so that's, yes. I think there's kind of a nice balance between learning things that you think you will never use, just sit there and learn it for the sake of learning. And people talk like that about math. Well, I'm never going to use algebra. Well, you use it every day. In fact, you go to the market, if you want one apple and it's 50 cents and you decide you want two, you know how much it is right away and if you can afford it. Of course you use math. So, I mean, I like the idea of learning what you think you might not use and then putting a lot more in of what you will, but that being noticed and not an invisible part of your own surrounding, that's got to be so damaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, this feels good to even talk about and hear about. Thank you. So read a couple of your other later poems maybe. So I want to ask you because I'm about love letters and the power of them. And you said you had written a poem as a love letter to yourself. What made you do it?
Well, it was the year 2000, and I turned 20 in the year 2000, and it was just kind of a reflection of entering a new phase of my life, having been reflecting on you know, my life so far, and so, yeah, I titled it A Letter to My Soul. Soul, you seem so confused, abused, and amused. Searching, losing, and finding all at once. Dying, growing, and maintaining in the struggle to survive. On the journey to hold on to sanity in this insane reality. A scared little girl in a brave woman's mind. Exploring the wrong caves with the right maps. Loving with insecurities is hurting continually. Both under and overestimating. Both pushing and pulling, my heart already torn, yet my heart is tearing some more. But still, I feel your voice inside, urging me to survive. Your earthly self, Kyra.
Oh, that is wonderful.
Thank you.
Gosh, you touch on things that are just wonderful. I mean, including, may I just grab this book?
Yes.
This, The Wrong Caves with the Right Maps. And there is that tragic problem of having your eye on the wrong ball. And while you're trying to do one thing, you get some hatchet in your back that you didn't expect coming.
Yeah.
Yes. And you said, wait, one other thing that I really, on the journey to hold on to sanity in this insane reality. I think the world has always been insane.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Do you find it less insane that you're getting older?
No, I find it more.
Don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's becoming more, just the fast, how much more fast-paced it is,
yes.
How bombarded we are with technology and knowledge and information, and it's just sensory overload.
Population growth, by the way. I don't understand how we can do what you want to do. When I was in grammar school, the world population, as I recall being taught, was 2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it is now.
Like 5?
Like 8.
No way.
Yeah, I know.
Stay updated on this stuff.
Well, it seems to me, and I wonder what you think, it's like we have to thin our own herd gently and voluntarily before nature does it violently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely feel, that's another thing that, you know, I would love our educational system to include more nature, you know.
What about human responsibility?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's part of it, you know, educating young people on our interdependency with our environment, our natural world, you know. It's so important, and yeah, I think it's you're right. You know, if we don't find a way to balance the way we live with nature, nature will do it for us,
mm-hmm.
and we're not going to win in that struggle.
You see that with these, you know, hurricanes?
Yeah, we're not going to win in that struggle.
Let me ask you. Well, we're not going to win in that struggle
if we keep on
this way, because we're not winning, we're losing.
Exactly.
Okay. So I want to ask you one other question, just about love letters. Have you ever written one to your mother?
I have. I've written a poem.
Because I think I want to.
Yeah, I
to
have.
To your mother. Yeah.
I did. Yeah, I wrote a poem for her, and I gave it to her on her birthday or mother. I think it was Mother's Day or her birthday 1 year.
She
has it up in her room.
Oh, good. Okay. So I wanted to also, when you gave it to her, did you give it to her and leave the room, or did you stay there?
No, yeah, I stayed there.
Okay. Because, I always feel that when you give somebody a love letter, that it's best just to leave the room, because reading a love letter is private.
Yeah.
Like, you know what's in it, but
yeah.
And she was comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Reading. Okay,
yeah.
Good. What did she say?
She liked it.
Yeah.
She said thank you. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it about her?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, just kind of me showing my appreciation for her and, you know, how strong and smart and loving I feel she is. And,
oh, good. Yes. Is she still working?
You know, she's actually struggling right now just because she worked all her life, you know, and she has a carpal tunnel syndrome. And so she's on unemployment right now, or, you know, trying to get permanent disability. And so that's just a whole bureaucratic
yes.
process. And
but she would want to work if she could, or?
I mean, yeah. I mean, but I want her to retire already. No, I mean, I feel like that would be.
So would that
yeah,
be good
so
for
that's
her?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of my goals in life is just save money and buy her a house.
Oh,
in
you're such an
another
angel
country.
Yes. Would she like her to be back?
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
I think that's hard to leave your own culture. I mean, you were born here, so
yeah.
this is your culture in a lot of
yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, darling, for doing this with me.
Thank you.
I feel privileged to have heard your poetry.
Thank
Wonderful
you.
To have heard your story and gotten to know you, and just relieved to talk to somebody about what should be done in our schools, which are clearly in some ways not serving, and in other ways serving very well, maybe depending on the population. Did you ever read about Erin Gruwell?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I'm going to send you that website.
Okay.
She's a miracle worker. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janet. Have a great day.
Thank you. So I want to say, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now. And remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is a special occasion. See you later.